Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very 286th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games and the people who love board games. I'm joined, as always, by Matt.
Hello there.
And we're going to do a running special.
It's a running special.
A sprinting special.
Yeah, so if you're there thinking, gosh, yes, finally the Venn diagram of things I enjoy, board games, listening to podcasts about board games, and also getting my trainers out and moving those legs around and getting some good old exercise outside on the grass or the road, feeling the wind running through your hair, then no, I'm sorry. It's not for you. This is not about real running. It's just all the games we're talking about today have a theme. And the theme involves running.
We're going to be talking about Hot Streak, a game about mascot racing, about running mascots. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about Magical Athlete, a game of strange little cartoon characters also doing running. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about 12 Rivers, a game of 12 rivers running, like water. Like a river.
Like a tap runs.
Like a river runs.
Yes.
Yeah. First up on this podcast, we're going to talk about 12 Rivers. This is a game designed by Roman Catadjian, published by Good Games Publishing, and with art by Dauphin. And it is a game in which you are collecting magical pearls from a big old river. The kind of unique thing about this game is that it has a board that you kind of prop up to give you an actual stream.
Yeah.
You dispense these marbles at the top of a sort of almost machine, if you can call it that, that's going to kind of let the marbles trickle down into these little slots. They'll eventually get to this little terminus point at the bottom. They'll pool at the bottom, but along the way, you might block their path.
Yes.
With your workers.
So the construction of this is pretty wild. It's like a thick foam thing that stands up at an angle, and it means that then you have these wooden player pieces that you're going to be slotting in to little like gaps in the river, which are going to stop the marbles from falling down.
Yeah. I'm going to make the thumbnail for this podcast a picture of this game so that you can get what we're talking about
here.
Because it is kind of essential that you can see what this game is, because we're doing a terrible job of describing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like an inverse of a pachinko machine, really, isn't it? It's the way all the balls start up at the top on these little rivers, and then as they go down, the rivers, each two rivers merge into one until it keeps merging down until you have just one river at the end.
All the 12 rivers become one pond,
and then basically you can be sticking your oar in at any point in these rivers, really, and going, I want the balls to stop here. And there's lots of slots moving up towards the top of the board, which means, you know, if you put something right at the top of the board, right at the top of the river before it's gone anywhere, then you're guaranteed to catch something.
The very first marble that's going to run down this board.
And then the lower down the board, it's cheaper to pay to play your tiles there to stop balls, but it might be that by the time the balls get there, there really aren't any balls left.
There's nothing to choose from.
Yes. So it's a game of basically taking it in turns and effectively found it an engine to be just being mean to each other, really.
Yes, of having
somebody going, well, I'm going to put one here so I get a little blue pearl to put on my alpaca. And you going, haha, I'm going to go above you. Now that pearl is mine.
Yeah, that's sort of the chief interaction of this game, because it's very visible what colours of pearls each player wants, because what you're essentially trying to do is a sort of contract slash set collection order fulfillment type thing.
Yes.
Where you have these villager tiles in front of you that have little sockets for the pearls that you're collecting from the river. And so, oh, I can see that Matt wants a blue pearl. I'm going to stick my oar in right above him and snatch it away. Ha ha ha. I'm so mean, but also I did lose the game.
It's weirdly a very dry game disguised as something very wet,
you know?
Because there was a point where you were like, oh, this game's pretty silly. And I'm like, well, it isn't though, in a way, because of the fact that like it's like, really, there's no reason for it to be marbles.
It's
just fun.
It's essentially an auction game.
Yeah.
Like, it is just, I'm going to bid three cards to get first dibs at this lot of marbles. And then you can bid less to get, like, less choice, essentially.
Yes, 100%. There's no randomness involved. It's not like with some games where you have marbles spilling out and going down where you think, well, anything can happen. You just wait till they move down, and then any marbles clumped up at one of the blockades you've made on this board, you just choose one of them and then you pull out your tile to let them continue downwards. So it means as you go on, there is a degree to which, you know, lower down, you don't know which marbles you're going to get access to, if any, by the end of the round, but you do know that there'll be something. Once everything is placed, you have a kind of knowable sense. And also looking at what the players are doing, you can go, well, I feel safe there because it's likely that if they've bid that high, it's because they want that color of marble, which means they'll probably leave this one for me. So there's an element of like real knowability there, but it is funny how having this like ball-based angled monstrosity of a table presence toy to play with makes it feel like it could just be cubes on a flat thing.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it should be. It's one of those things where, like, but you realize the game is, there's no element of physics to it at all.
No.
It's just a fun thing.
It is just, yeah, it's just fun. Like, it just gives it this ridiculous, like, sort of dramatic table presence and this nice moment when you release the marbles and they all go exactly where you thought they were going to go. It's kind of funny that the biggest spike of randomness in this game is not what looks like a sort of random yep. marble sorting machine, but is the fact that you have to pull these marbles from a bag.
Yep.
And in our game, you play five rounds of this game.
Yep.
In our five rounds, one of the colors of ball just never showed
up. We never saw it, not even once,
which is really funny because the starter character that you have to like fill up or do the little contract for needs one of these white balls that there are supposedly fewer of. We found none of them at all.
We didn't get any. There was no chance.
And I think we should put a caveat here, like almost right at the top of our chat about 12 Rivers. We played this at two players and there is no way you should play this game at two players.
No.
I think this is a three or four player game. Ideally a four player game.
I think so.
Because then you
so.
Get to use the full board.
Exactly. I think that's one of the biggest issues I have with it straight away. Because I liked it and I liked some of the ideas there. But the fact that with two players, you don't even use all of the rivers. You just use half of it.
Yes.
Which means you have this big thing in the table that you want to play with. And you just do still get to play with it.
Only a bit.
But like only putting like six balls in the top at a time instead of the full 12 and imagining lifting up a piece of cardboard and letting 12 balls all roll at the same time.
Literally twice as good.
That's twice as exciting. That's huge. But just having half of it and being like, oh, we're not using that half of the river today was like, oh.
Yeah, we're just playing six rivers.
Oh, I just want all of the rivers.
There was also a very strange thing that happened with the turn order in this game because essentially the higher up you put your little blockades in the river, the later in the turn order you're going to go in the next round. And it kind of meant that we had this strange ebb and flow where essentially, rather than our pieces being all jumbled up, where it was my go, then Matt's go, then my go, then Matt's go, then Matt's go twice, then my go twice, woohoo! It was instead just Matt placed all of his pieces, I placed all of my pieces.
Yes.
And then the next round, the inverse of that happened.
Yes, because it is, and I think with more players, that would shake out in a way which would be quite fun.
Yes.
Because of the fact that, like, I thought it was a neat way of resolving the turn orders when I read it in the manual. And I think it is. It just doesn't work with two, because it means that effectively, the more further up the river that you place your tokens means that you're going to come last in turn order next round. But it also means you're going to be having way fewer resources to spend next round as well. Mm-hmm. So it did create this very reliable pattern with just two people, where I think with more players, you would have an ebb and flow of someone having a big turn and then a quiet turn. And it wouldn't just be like, oh, we've now established a pattern that will just continue for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's a strange game, this. Like, I had a pleasant time playing it, but I don't have any real urge to return to it. And it had that thing of us... It's an interesting position for us to be in, right? Because I feel like you feel kind of similar.
I think I liked it, and I feel like it's a game that basically ended up in a strange space where I think it could be a really fun, like, family weight game.
Yeah.
But I felt that, like, there was just a couple of extra rules that were a bit more, like, you know, gamery in terms of, you know, being able to spend these cards to do powers and stuff and having tokens that get you powers, and also the maths at the end to count up the score.
Yeah,
not difficult if you play a bunch of games, but it wasn't like really, it was slightly more complicated than a family weight game.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, like, I feel like as a game that I want to play for hard, you know, serious, do something
serious, gamers only.
You know, not to be too much of a ridiculous a caricature of that, but it didn't quite have enough like to it.
Yes.
And I think part of that does come down to the production of it, right? And the fact that I think the production of it makes it a really fun family thing, because I do think that the presentation of it and the act of like having these marbles running down, really fun. But then by having this foam board thing that you're slotting wooden pieces into, it does mean that I think it's less malleable as a design in terms of then balancing it for different player counts and stuff. Yeah. I think it would maybe have to say, oh, well, in two players, you can't use these slots or whatever, you know, because I think it needs that, because I felt like it needed to have a little bit more difficulty in the decisions and a little bit more of a tighter space
to make it into a game that you would want to come back to versus something that's...
So it's like, I wouldn't, like, I'd be able to 100% recommend it as a family weight game, but then I feel like after the initial fun of the marbles has worn off a bit, I'm like, would I play this over something maybe a little less flashy, but a little more solid?
I almost feel like, as well, there's something I can't quite put my finger on, but I think the fact that the marble run style component of it, it feels like it's designed to be targeted towards families, and that it's fun, that it's chunky, that it has like a real visual element to it. But also, I don't think it's necessarily interactive enough to make it something that my family at least would really enjoy getting a hold of. I think there's something, because it's so predetermined, and you're just watching these marbles, they don't even travel very far. They immediately hit these little bumpers that you put in the way. And you only get to see it happen 5 times in the whole game, because it's a 5-round game. Yes. And it doesn't have that pleasing visual marble run satisfaction to it, but it also isn't like a rock solid bit of game either. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I mean. I agree. I think like I don't mind the kind of like the fact that what happens is very much determined by player actions, and I think that's quite interesting. The fact that you can have a little bit of a psychological game of like playing it in a way that you don't know exactly what you're going to get until later in the round, when then you do have a much clearer sense before the marbles have been released.
Yeah.
But you don't get to do it that often. I guess that's what I mean in terms of there being like maybe slightly too much complexity in terms of the systems around it. Means you're not spending enough of the game putting these marbles in and releasing them down the thing. Mm-hmm. I think really though, it's like, it's funny. We caveating big time that we played it with two. It's clearly not going to be very good with two. But I think again, that is part of it to me, in the fact that I think I would have liked to have seen a degree more thought to the design in terms of that, in the fact that it was the only way you balanced the game for two players was just using half the board.
Yeah, half as many rivers.
There weren't any other changes in terms of going, man, use this, change this, in a way that makes me think there probably would have been a way of changing the game to balance it so that you always play with the thing.
Full board. Yeah.
And that was a thing that just made me think, yeah, like, you know, I don't want to have something that big coming out unless you get to play with it fully, you know? And I've got no problem with that. I like playing with things.
Who doesn't?
But yeah, I think that was one of the elements that made me think, okay, like there's not been quite the right amount of focus and thought in terms of like finishing this off and getting it into a stage where it's exciting.
Yeah.
And I think it's one, again, exists in that weird space where I'm like, would I play this myself? Maybe once or twice. Would I recommend it to a family? I don't know if I could. I liked it. I wanted to like it more.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Next up, Matt, we're going to do a double bill of racing games.
Two bills.
That we're really, really fond of. We're going to talk about Hot Streak and Magical Athlete. These are both games published by CMYK. Hot Streak, designed by John Perry with art by Cecile Gariepi. And Magical Athlete, designed by Richard Garfield, Ricky G, Takashi Ishida, with art by Angela Kirkwood. And we should do our classic flag at the start of this, that we have a little bit of bias here because we have worked with CMYK in the past on Monica's Expansions, on Wilmot's Warehouse, and Shut Up and Sit Down alumnus Quentin Smith is doing some How to Play videos for them.
This is true.
We have done some things with CMYK in the past, I was going to say, that we're not proud of. But that's not true. But we've worked with them in the past.
After a few drinks, you never know what's going to happen. Admittedly, I'm not proud of what we did. We're banned from Berlin.
We've worked with CMYK in the past. There's a little bit of bias going into this. But nevertheless, we really like both of these games.
Yeah, these games are both very, very strong. Just really annoyingly exciting, infectious products that are just delightful games that I think if you have got a family or friends, then both of these are hot and spicy exciting.
Should we talk about Hot Streak first?
Yes, please.
This is a mascot racing game where you have four delightful, chunky plastic mascots. This feels like a point where I go into a whole tangent about how I feel like this game uses plastic miniatures really, really well. Like, normally we hate them in games, but these are like the exact right use case for them.
It's always about, like, you know, the weird intangible ratio of like, does it need to be there? Does it feel like it's the right size? Do you get to touch it all the time?
And yes, right?
Exactly.
In this game, you have these four mascots. You have Gobbler, a large orange bear type creature. You've got Hurley, a hot dog that's not actually a hot dog, technically.
Yeah.
The law says so.
Yeah.
Dangle, who's a little anglerfish type fella. And Mum, who's the queen.
Yeah. It's Dangler, isn't it?
It's Dangle.
I thought it was Dangler.
Nah, I thought it was Dangler because then it would annoy me that it was Gobbler and Dangler. But no,
okay.
It's Dangle. Singular.
Okay.
Not
well,
singular.
All of the names of the characters are silly, and I think that's really important.
It's very important.
They're all kind of verging on being rude, or at least the foundation for something rude.
Yeah.
A rude comment, which I think, again, is probably intentional.
Gobble, hurl, and dangle.
Exactly. And mum.
And mum.
Just mum being like, your mum's fallen over. Like, I think that it is like, it's one of the tiny details of this game that I think does add together to create something that just gently sings at
yes.
the table.
It's got so much character. So the way this game works is very, very simple. You do a betting phase and a racing phase. In the betting phase, you will bet on which of these mascots you think is going to cross the line first. And when all the betting is taking one of these tiles that will pay out a certain amount for if that racer is in first, second, or third.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like spend money in this game to
no.
place a bet. You just take one, essentially. There's also a side bet as an option, which will have some kind of qualification, like will Hurley fall over in
yeah.
this race or something.
There's
like
a deck of cards, and each race you just see one, and it's like, what do you think of this gonna happen?
Yeah.
Do you think they're all gonna finish? You think anyone's gonna run off the side of the pitch?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and you just have to decide when taking a bid if you want to take a bid on yes or no for that.
Yeah, so it's either take a bid on a main racer or take one of these little side bids, and then you race.
Mm-hmm.
You take this big deck of cards, which is shuffled at the start of the game, and importantly, everyone knows the contents of it at the start.
Yes.
You give a little shuffle, and you go 3, 2, 1, those first three cards you burn. You don't get to look at them
mm-hmm.
until you reshuffle, and then you just play each of the cards from the deck, and the racers will move. It's almost automated. Just
yep.
one person pulls the cards, and the racers move on their own accord. They might move forwards. They might move left. They might move right. They might fall over.
Mm.
But this is where Hot Streak kind of like shows its hand in being a tremendously silly racing game, because almost immediately all of these idiot mascots are bumping into each other,
falling over,
trampling on each other.
Yeah.
They're veering off the race course. They're doing all kinds of stupid nonsense. I think in our very first game, it was like 3, 2, 1, go. The starting pistol fires. The first card is drawn. Mum falls over.
Yes.
Like on the start line.
Yes.
And the mental image is just delightful. The idea of the gun going off and the person inside the costume being so scared they just collapse instantly.
Yeah. It's inherently designed in a way that, like, before you start bidding, you're just going to put this whole deck out, and so everyone can see the full distribution.
Yes.
And you'd be like, okay, well, there might be tons more cards for one character than the other ones.
Because it's completely random.
Yeah.
Essentially.
When you make these bids, it's exciting because it's a draft, right? Which means you go round and you get different like odds depending on how early you take a bid. So
mm-hmm.
if you are first to make a bet and you go, oh, I think Gobbler's going to do well, you take that big chunky bet token off the top, and then it means there's some other ones underneath that will give money for if Gobbler comes first, second, or third
mm-hmm.
as well, but less money.
Yes.
Which means you have this interesting position of wanting to like get in early and get the best odds when you think something's going to go a certain way. But then also it's quite good going late on to be able to see how other people anticipate this race is going to go.
Yeah, who's going to invest in
because there's
cards.
A secret spice to
there's
each race.
There's a big however
yeah.
on this one. Before the race starts, every player has a little hand of three cards that are the same as the little racing cards, and they will choose one of them from their hand to add into that deck of cards. So you might look at a race and you might see that Mum has loads and loads and loads of cards, so everyone's betting big on Mum. She's going to move so fast.
See?
But
everyone's
you...
betting big on Mum. It's just funny to say. It's not a coincidence. Carry on.
But you have not been betting on Mum. And why is that? It's because you've got a card in your hand that's going to make Mum fall over.
Yes.
And so in the start, you just quietly slip that into the deck. And maybe someone else who hasn't bet big is also doing the same thing.
Yep.
And suddenly the whole pudding is ruined.
Yes.
Mum's falling over constantly. Everyone who has bet on her is having a nightmare of a time. But you don't have any certainty in that because of that 3-2-1 thing at the start. Like, three cards are not going to appear for
yep.
the first cycle of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I should make it clear, you keep shuffling that deck over and over. Like, every time you run out, you shuffle until
yes.
you have a first, second, and
so often
place.
Like, you won't have the deck going through, you won't finish a race. It'll
right.
often be that, like, I don't know, maybe one player has been knocked out, because
yes.
players can be knocked out by either just like, because often the cards will say things like veer left or veer right.
Right. That and doesn't seem so bad.
No, but each of the characters seems to have, like, as far as I can tell, like, mainly just one direction, which
mm-hmm.
means if you have a character that has the ability to veer right, it's just, it can only veer right during a race, which means at some point it might just go off the edge of the map, at which point they're gone.
Right.
Also, if they fall over and another racer runs into them when
mm-hmm.
they've fallen over,
yep.
they're out of the race.
Or if a racer bumps into another racer, they'll knock them over, and then if someone else runs over
yeah.
them, then they'll trample them.
They're gone.
There's all kinds of ways.
So often races end without all of the characters getting
crossing
over
the line.
crossing the line, or at least like maybe just one or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll be shuffling these cards and having these races. And the main thing about this is the fact that the game encourages you to have one person who is flipping over the cards.
Yes.
One person who is then like moving the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Means that the game has like a real electric energy when it's going.
Yes.
When it's live.
It's sort of immediately people might think this is quite similar to the horse racing games that we love so dearly. And in fact, we talked about on a very recent podcast, we talked about Winning Ticket. And Hot Streak is similar to those games, but for me at least, I find it so much more easy to get involved in this game than I have done with other racing games that are similar. Mm. For some reason, I can never really get into the spirit of something like Ready, Set, Bet. When the dice are being rolled, no matter how fast they're going, I find the kind of action of it kind of like tepid for some reason. And I just can't get the excitement of the race in me. It doesn't feel like I'm watching an actual race. It feels like I'm playing a board.
I guess because of the pace of it, because you have to like roll a dice then move the thing. But the fact that like there is really no limit to how quickly this can happen, apart from when you have to stop and shuffle, which does feel like a bit of an anticlimax sometimes when it's near the end. But again, it builds the tension.
When you stop and shuffle, the track gets a little bit smaller and might eliminate people as well,
this
which is kind of cool.
This
so there's
is
always
true.
A little bit of that going on.
So it is like escalating. So it's also a chance that like maybe the race ends now because it's time to shuffle, but no, it doesn't matter because someone's out, which is good. Mm-hmm. Any time you can skip a card shuffle in a game, I'm all for it. But yeah, like that escalation, especially when you have a few people, like usually start off with one person flipping the cards and one person moving all the pieces. But after a while, you end up having one person flipping them and then like loads of people moving them.
Yeah.
Which means you can really ramp up the pace and be like, two forward, this one forward. And it does become very silly. And I think some people listening to this, especially if you see what it looks like, it is very colourful. It's a very gimmicky looking box with the racetrack that you pull out of it from a spool, which pretty over the top, but I'll give them that. It's like it's a really fun production.
Delightful.
Hell, why not? But actually, like, there's more thought to playing it than you would think because of the fact that, like, these three cards you have in hand and which card you choose to put into the mix. Because the crucial thing is, you're not then in the next round, the next race, getting like a whole new set of cards. That ecosystem of cards stays the same for the whole game.
Yes.
And it means that, like, early on, if, like, at the start of the game, when you get given your three cards, you might have a card that is, like, ridiculous, like a card that moves a character forward three spaces, or they're very rare, but you might have a character that turns a character around. So it means, hey, in every race that character's been running really quickly, but now they might run really quickly the other way,
the complete opposite direction,
which I'll tell you what, that's not going to win you.
Yeah,
it's not going to win you races. So because of that, it means that like in the last round of the game, there's a lot of like people feel quite sure about the shape of things.
Yes.
Because you feel like, well, we're using the same deck of cards. Mm-hmm. It changes a little bit, but everyone now knows consistently that stupid fish keeps falling over and getting knocked out and that bear keeps winning.
Right.
And so then in the last round, people are bidding like very confidently almost on the shape of it, but it means there are opportunities to be savvy. And the fact that not only are you putting a card from your hand into the mix, you're being dealt out a card from that deck again each round.
Yes.
Which means you might have players waiting for this really good card that makes mum shoot off, and you know that it's not in the deck anymore because you got it dealt back to you.
Yeah, or vice versa. You could have the stupid fish falling over every round and then you are now holding the dangle falls down card and you're like, oh, I sense a bit of an opportunity.
Yes.
If this fish isn't falling over anymore, he might actually stand a chance of winning the race.
Yes.
And
we just have that nice like insider betting vibe, you know, of like, oh, I know something that other people don't.
Yeah. There's so many, like, I think that's kind of what elevates this game. It's just a series of very small touches. It's stuff like the races being called ridiculous names. It's stuff like these really, like, putting the production in the right places, making these characters really, like, pop on the table, making them feel good to hold. Like, even just divvying out the roles between the person dealing the cards and the person moving. And that deck manipulation aspect that is just simple enough that it's incredibly easy to understand.
Yes.
Like, you never have a problem teaching it to people, but also it does add just enough strategic depth to make you feel like you're doing something strategically, but not so much that it becomes crunchy or thinky.
No.
It's just enough.
And it's simple enough that you can just get on with it, but also it's devious enough that most players, if they've like played a few games, will maybe, you know, halfway through the game, two-thirds of the way through the game, clock what it means. You know, it's that nice thing where you suddenly go, oh, and you realize that like maybe everyone else is still playing a silly game, but maybe I'm going to start playing a devious game. I must know every time I play this, I've done dramatically very well at it, which means I'm obviously
a hot streak,
incredibly
sharp,
skilled at moving hot dogs around.
Yeah, I think that it's just delightful, isn't it? It's probably one of our favorite of this kind of genre of daft racing game.
I think it is what I am going to coin as a smarty game. And I may have already said that before. It's a silly, annoying word.
Yeah.
But I think it's a smart party game.
A smarty game.
In the fact that it's not just like, what are we doing? This is completely pointless. It is raucous. It is fun. And it is designed to be streamlined in a way that you can just get into it and have a fun time.
Yes.
But also, I think what I like about both of these games, actually, both Hot Streak and Magical Athlete, is that they are games that allow players to lean into them or lean out of them as much as they want. If you want to be really involved, then you can be. But if you want to be passive and just sitting there and semi-involved, then you can as well. Like, Hot Streak is a game that, you know, yes, it works best when everyone's helping out and doing stuff, but you can just have one person running the whole thing. Especially, you know, if you're nippy and ambidextrous, you can just, you can run the game for everyone else and they can just engage with it in a light way.
Yes. When I've played it, it's kind of delightful that I've never really felt like I've had to actively teach either of these games. I just start running them for
exactly
people.
Right.
And Hot Streak, I think, works really well. Like, I've shown it to a bunch of people who don't really play any board games, and I've shown it to them because I'm like, this is more of a game show. It's delightful. Yep. And for the first round, I just run it all, and they understand it completely by the second round. And when I say, does someone want to move the pieces, they go, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Like, it's about that confidence. I think if you ask that question straight away, people might be a little reticent, but as soon as they've seen the shape of it, because they're so simple.
Yes.
But then I think that it's lovely because both of these games do a great job of having these little tiny mechanical details that can make even people who don't play any games go, oh, hold on a second.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Let's move on to Magical Athlete, actually.
Yeah, let's move on.
Magical Athlete, it's fascinating because it's almost like there's a lot of similarities between
like a mirror world version of Hot Streak.
But very different, right? Yes. I think they both have a similar focus in terms of, like, I like that both games have a system of being like, set it up, these are the components you need, put everything else back in the box, just get it out of the way in a way that's very simple. And I also like the fact that in Magical Athlete, this is a roll and move game.
It is.
Where you're rolling dice and then moving your piece along.
Hell yeah.
And you win by getting to the end of the track.
Woo!
It looks like a fever dream of like a 70s childhood TV show that haunted
that shouldn't have existed.
It's like being waterboarded in sherbet, you know? It's like, it's just a ridiculously, like, what is going on here? Which I think is a perfect, like, aesthetic for a game that does look like a nightmarish, boring board game from our childhood.
Yes.
And I feel like that's intentional because what it does is it takes the model of the roll and move, which is just, you know, a shuddering, terrible format most of the time because of the games we were served as kids.
Yeah.
And just goes, well, hang on a minute. What about if instead of like trying to make roll and moves more like gamey, we just made them like even sillier?
Yes.
To the power of 10.
Kind of as preposterous as possible.
Yes.
It's so delightful. I've been waiting for this. So this game is a remake of an older game that has been out of print for ages. Essentially, what you're going to be doing in this game is you are going to be drafting a team of racers at the start from this massive pool. I don't know how many there are, but there's a lot of these sort of delightful little printed meeples that you've got. You're going to choose your little team of racers that come with a little card and they come with a little power. And once you've done your draft, it's time to do some races. And you do four races total. You flip between the mild side of the board where there's no special spaces and the wild side of the board where there's some special spaces.
Yeah.
And each race, you're going to choose one of those races that you drafted at the start to compete. And then on your turn, all you're going to do is roll the dice and move your racer that many spaces forward. However,
yes,
all of the racers have a completely bonkers game-breaking power that just changes the game into this weird mutant version of a roll and move game every single time that you play it.
Yeah, it's like if Candyland was crossed with like Cosmic Encounter.
Yes, that's effectively a very apt comparison.
And I think that like it's just incredibly silly, but I think one of the reasons why this thrives is that like each player gets their own dice. If this was a game where you had to keep passing the dice around and rolling, I think it would be awful. I think it would just be like, okay, I can see what they were trying to do here, but this is still a roller move. You know, it might be like, it's like something you're making like an ironic video game where it's like, oh, you know, they hate those video games where you have to go down corridors that are boring, shooting things. It's like, yeah, but you're still doing that.
Okay,
like,
sure.
Whereas in this, I think it's silly, but it means that people who might look at it and go, well, this is silly, what's the point in this? Don't have time to activate that part of their brain because it's always time to roll the dice. And then before they know it, they realize that actually, it's a lot more fun than you're expecting, and there is more, a little bit more strategy to it.
A tiny bit.
Only a little teeny weeny bit.
A smudge.
But enough to keep you invested, enough to keep you invested in the meta of the game and the broader things going on.
I don't want to mislead people into thinking that this game is kind of strategically rewarding,
no.
Say. But it is rewarding in the sense that you set a kind of Rube Goldberg machine in motion and you watch the results with absolute delight.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good example of a kind of system that you could create is, we had one, there's a character called the Mouth.
Yeah.
The Mouth, when the Mouth lands on your space, the Mouth eats you.
Yeah.
And you are eliminated from the race, which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had a game where we had the Mouth.
And the Party Animal.
When they stop their movement, they sort of move people towards their space, just one space at a time.
Everyone gravitates towards them slowly.
Yes, exactly.
Which obviously was wicked for me as the Mouth, because if I had to be in the space with just one person,
mm-hmm.
but it meant with everyone constantly being pulled together, it made it likely that everyone A, was going to struggle to finish the race.
Yes.
Because they'd be moving backwards slightly,
uh-huh.
which was good for me because I wanted to eat them. And then B, we had another character that made it so that you couldn't win the race. Other people couldn't win the race unless they rolled exactly the right number.
Yeah, the stickler.
Which is how I got a little picture of a worm holding a rule book.
Holding the rule book for Magical Athlete.
And I was like, this is fantastic.
It's so good. It felt like a trash compactor.
Yeah.
It was like you were on one end, the stickler on the other, meaning that people couldn't escape. And then you were just slowly lumbering towards the little congregation centered around the party animal.
And I was really sad because I ate the party animal really early on. And then it meant that people weren't being pulled back towards him. And I was just slowly trying to catch people and eat them.
Didn't we also have in that game, we had the gunk, which meant everyone just moved one space less.
Yeah.
And it meant that constantly you were rolling two, so the Mouth would move one space every turn, just slowly, ominously trudging towards us. And on the other end, with like the stickler being like, nope, you cannot end the game.
So yeah, it was just like, just by having this combination of races in the race, we kind of created our own like flare trousered wearing horror movie in
a
way.
Beautiful.
Like it was like, it was genuinely tense and people going, oh, horrible. And again, I think like that's why this game does remind me so much of Cosmic Encounter. It's just that with that, like you have these games that might run between 20 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on what things you randomly draft,
right.
Which then create these strange mechanical systems that you then really, it's not about winning the game then. It's about just collectively enjoying the strange circumstance you're in.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think that's where this really thrives.
I think that's where both of these games, both Hot Streak and Magical Athlete, really, where they really get it right is the fact that the actual race itself is so entertaining to watch unfold, like just systemically. Like players are delighted by that they almost don't care about winning or losing on the sides of things. And in fact, both games are pretty ambivalent towards winning and losing.
Yes.
Hot Streak, you just read out a little entry that tells you what happens to you after the game has ended.
Yeah, depending on how much money you have.
Based on how much money you have.
Which is a lovely thing. It's just like more than, I think there's 100 listings.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
And it's just like, so it means rather than being like, who won? It's like the question at the end of the game is, how much money do you have? And then everyone gets read out like their own little like fortune cookie style nonsense.
And it's like, well, you can determine who wins from that.
Yeah.
Who do you think had the best life after
this? It's fun.
And then, you know, Magical Athlete, I think, does have a more hard and fast winner at the end of it,
yes.
If you got the most points. But it also has like a little nod towards this ambivalence where I think if you're tied, you just share it. You just, both players win, because it doesn't really matter. The joy of it is watching all of this unfold, right?
Yeah.
And I think, like every time we've played Magical Athlete, we've had multiple races that just feel so... They make you laugh so much because they are so absurd.
Yeah.
Like proper, like, you know, belly laughing at this madness that's unfolding on the
table.
And
you do still have that kind of like the real game becomes in the meta between the races. The real game becomes like, much like with Cosmic, it becomes, well, we have to mess up this person as much as possible because they've got loads of points.
Yes.
So it's like, how can we... Because some of the characters you race with actually, you know, give you choices. They let you maybe swap your position with another racer.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, you know, there's lots of weird and wacky things that can happen. Some of my favorites involve like rolling ones. The character that whenever someone rolls one, it means doesn't matter whose go is next, it's your go now.
Yeah, the skipper.
Which with lots of players can be absurd.
It's really funny.
Because you can just have characters who just don't get to roll for like two or three turns because it keeps skipping them.
I love the duelist as well. Whenever you land on someone's space, you can yell duel, and then you both roll your dice. And again, this is where having your own dice really comes into its own. You both roll your dice, and then whoever is the highest then gets to move like two spaces, which can then trigger another duel as the duelist like goes around the board fighting literally everyone over and over and over again.
You often have turns where it is just like this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and then you're like, whose turn is it now? Because so much weird stuff happened after that one little tiny roll. It's just a very entertaining, like silly system that gives you enough choice at the start when you're drafting to feel like you're being slightly savvy about your choices based on what other people have taken. Because then, you know, before each race, you're all going to randomly hold out a character piece and reveal them at the same time, which means there is a tiny bit of mind games like, when are people, you know, that's so powerful. Are they going to save that for the last race? Will they get points?
Or knowing they have it in the last race and then trying to think about what you might save for that
exactly
one. But you can't do that too much.
And then also, like, you're still going to be at the whims of rolling a dice and then moving like maybe four places or five places, you know. So it's like you can make good choices and then still get ruined because you rolled a dice badly. And I think that the fact that the game knows that and is sort of like doing a cheeky shrug the whole time, it makes it work. It means it's never frustrating. It's always just stupid.
Yes.
And like that's beautiful.
That's exactly what I want. Both of these games are just, they're fabulous. They're really, really good racing games. I can't see me getting rid of them.
No, I think they both have a real place because they are different enough.
They really are.
Like, and I think they pair very well. But I do think that the thing I can't get over with Magical Athlete is the power of having your own dice.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it is, because I've played many games where you get your own dice, like multiples, but like, just having one die that's
and
yours,
it be so chunky.
It's strange. They're chunky, they're all different colors. And when we played it for the first time, the player next to me, friend of the show Jamie, would occasionally use my die instead of theirs when rolling.
And you were like, what the hell?
And it kind of upset me.
I think in that game we had a bit where Jamie rolled your dice and we went, hold on, you need to re-roll, that wasn't your dice.
But that's bizarre, because I'm not like very competitive when playing games, and I'm certainly not like weirdly like, that's my component, this is my thing. I'm like, why do I care? But it's strange that just having one chunky wooden die meant that when someone else rolled mine, I was like, no, that's my die.
Give me my one.
Which I found really odd and kind of really enjoyable.
Yeah. Odd and enjoyable is kind of what I would say to both these. I think they're huge crowd pleasers. I just delight in showing people these games. Like, as soon as I got them, I was just like, who can I show them to? Who'll have a nice time? Who'll get a kick out of it? And the delight is that I even think like Magical Athlete feels almost like it's made in for gamers broadly, because it's all about seeing the implications of like how the different rules combine. But I was just pleased at how much it's delighted like everyone. It really, like, my family loved it, and I was really surprised by that, because normally they're the kinds of people who don't really gel with, they see rules as an obstacle rather than as a piece of excitement in and of themselves. I think Magical Athlete needs you to understand that the rules are going to be exciting. The way these rules interact is going to be delightful. And this game kind of convinced my family of that in a strange way.
I think the interesting difference between these two games is that Hot Streak is it's almost like a Disneyland thing where you just get this stuff out and people are like, whoa, and then by the end of the game you've kind of like, you've seen it all, not in a bad way, but like, you know, here's all this stuff, and then you get halfway through the game and now you understand how it all works, and there's nothing you haven't seen and you get it. Whereas there is something about Magical Athlete that's a little bit like a peek behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz, and the fact that you get out this odd looking box and all of these pieces, all these different colorful strange characters, and then you go, right, we're doing this, and then you maybe take like a quarter of them, and then you just go, right, all these other ones go back in the box. You don't need to know about that.
And your friend, everyone goes, what?
It's this weird glimpse into another world where you could just be this sommelier of weirdness and be like, yeah, okay, don't worry about that. Forget about that. And people go, what about that? Why is one of the pieces like four times bigger than the other ones? And it's a massive baby. And you're like, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know that now.
I was disappointed that in our one game, Huge Baby didn't have much of an impact. Huge Baby just stops you from moving through Huge Baby space.
It's not a very exciting power, but I love that it's there because, yeah, it's not even four times bigger. It's like eight times bigger.
It's so big. It takes up gigantic. The whole space.
And like, again, I think because of that, I just feel like the whole production of Magical Athlete, and I think that a lot of this comes down to the work of the artist, just absolutely fantastic illustrations.
Phenomenal, yeah.
And it it really just creates something that feels like a dream.
Yes.
And the fact that you just go, what? That doesn't make sense. And then, you'd be like, there was 100 characters there, but then they all went and I don't remember and there was six left.
You know those like parody sketches that are like when your friend brings out a board game at the gathering or whatever. Yeah. And they always, or like the Parks and Rec Cones and Duncher thing of these absurd Byzantine rules. It's almost like Magical Athlete has that baked into it, but no one's the butt of the joke. It's just you're seeing all these absurd interactions and you're saying all these absurd things, yeah. But everyone's laughing rather than it being kind of something where one person's being a pain.
It feels like the kind of game that I think we'll be explaining in an old people's home to somebody and they will be like, yeah, we need to up their meds.
Yeah, you'll be like, because, see the huge baby.
Yeah,
combined with this
huge baby. And then one of the characters was just a flip-flop. It was just a little flip-flop with eyes.
The flip-flop, the huge baby, and then the Dice Mancer prevented the skipper from ending the game.
And they're like, is this a roll and move game? But there were like 30 characters, I think, and one was a banana. I don't know. It doesn't sound real.
It doesn't sound real. I'm not convinced it is.
Maybe it doesn't. And you know what, Tom? I'm not convinced this podcast is real.
Wow. Fading away like tears in the rain.
If you want to help us convince us that this podcast is real, then why not tell someone about it?
Yeah.
Or do a review on one of the internet platforms that exist. There's so many of them now.
You can leave a comment on Spotify now.
What?
And I read them.
That's unhinged.
Sometimes I might reply.
What?
Tell me what your favorite racing game is.
You can comment on Spotify now?
Yeah, I know.
I feel like
crazy.
I'm in the old people's home already.
It's time to put Grandad to bed.
Bye.
Bye.